expectations. Kadir was down in North Philly collecting the money everyone owed him. He went to the house where Gina had dropped off Sahira and Rahsaan. Rahsaan and Sahira were in a good sleep when Kwa woke them up, knocking at the bedroom door. "What happened to your hair, Sahira?" Kwa asked her, as she brushed by him going into the bathroom. "Ask your friend," she spat back at him. "Nasty little thing, ain't she?" "Yeah, she's not a happy camper." Ra grinned and gave Sahira another $300, but she continued to grouse when Kwa told her she would have to catch a cab home.
Kadir and Rahsaan cut through the park in West Philly to see Miss Shug. Miss Shug was a little elderly lady he did business with. Shug was something else.
Back in her day, she ran a speakeasy and a gambling spot. She even ran the numbers game.
Shug had it all.
All the men raved about her. She could have had her pick of any of them, but chose none. By the time she was ready to choose, she had so many kids by so many different men, and the streets had beat her up so bad, she was considered not the marrying type.
Shug was a hell of a woman, though.
Kadir listened to everything she said. He might not follow her instructions, but he listened. He knocked at her door.
One of Shug's granddaughters let him in.
She had so many grandchildren. There must have been at least 15 people living in the three-story row home on the narrow one-way street of the 2200 block of Bouvier Street. Entering the kitchen, he placed a bag holding a quarter kilo of cocaine on the table. "I need you to cook this up for me, Miss Shug."
"Fool, you always needing something. The only time you come to see Shug is when you need something," she said, pointing her finger at him. "I got the family coming over today. I got enough cooking around here to do already."
Shug could cook her ass off. She used to cook and sell platters when she was running her speakeasy back in the day.
"Those niggas used to pay me to cook their food for them, and you gonna pay me to cook this shit for you."
"Don't I always pay you?" Kadir considered. For a moment, this woman he'd come to count on, and saw that the once proud and sassy woman had slowed under the burden she'd carried for so many decades of doing for others. "Come on, baby. What's the matter?"
"Everything," she said.
"What?" He softly touched her shoulders and sat her at her own table. A barely discernible squeeze and a touch to her cheek brought a sad smile.
"It seems like you just don't be getting too far out here in life, Kadir. You do what you gotta do to survive out here. You try your damnedest to see that there's some food on the table and clothes for the kids, and it don't get you nowhere. Badass motherfuckers around here now don't listen. I done brought minds into the world. These ain't minds. They killing me, Kadir. Sure as there is a God in the sky, these badass kids is gonna be the death of me. Eight damn kids that ain't mine and here. Look at this."
Miss Shug pulled out a paper from her apron pocket
and handed it to Kadir, hoping that her scam would work.
Miss Shug always had a scam.
"What is it?"
"It's a get the fuck out notice. I've been paying the mortgage on this house now for 27 years. I only got 3 more to go, then this house is mine. After all this time, you'd think they couldn't do this."
Her face began to crumble. "How much do you need?" said Kadir, locating the total due on the paper.
"Oh, damn, Shug.
You had me worried. That's all you need? I got that for you, baby. Calm down."
"Kadir, stop your lying. You hardly pay me when I cook this shit up for you. so I know your black ass not gonna pay all that.
She looked at Kwa as if it were all his fault.
The truth of the matter was that Kadir always paid Suge whatever she wanted.
The price wasn't always the same, but Suge got paid. He would even stop by to see how she was doing and not ask her to do nothing for him. The bottom line was everybody wanted something. Everybody had a story. Kwa separated the two. He was always going to look out for her. It was the right thing to do.
Cook my shit up, Suge,
he said as he went outside. He came back in and handed her a bag of money.
Suge snickered on the inside,
but on the outside showed a look of gratefulness Kadir had never seen. There, that will save your house.
Suge couldn't believe it. It worked.
It was as if the Lord blessed somebody else, and they passed it on to her. She could barely whisper her thanks.
That's gonna be more than enough, Kadir.
Kwa was glad to bring hope to someone who deserved it. Here, get yourself something, and get something for the kids. He pulled out a wad of money from his pocket, peeling back a couple $100 bills. Kwa had money all over him.
I don't mean to fuss at you, baby, she said, changing everything up. You're the only one that understands. Oh, Kwa, I wish that damn John John had turned out like you,
she said, now standing up and reaching for an empty mayonnaise jar, going about the business she was in. She took the cocaine and mixed it with baking soda. She poured the combination in the mayonnaise jar and added the right amount of water, cooking batches at a time.
Suge knew what she was doing.
Gina got dressed and called a cab, going straight to Le Chez Vu Beauty Salon in South Philly. Hi, Gina, said one of the girls who worked there. Everyone knew her. She saw Beverly, her stylist.
What's up, Bev?
Yo, G, Bev smiled. Where you been?
Nowhere. Trying to get my life on.
Guess who's pregnant by Rick? Beverly asked.
Who?
I'm not gonna tell you. I know how you run your mouth.
Who? I won't tell.
Veronica.
He been fucking with her?
Gina said, turning her face all up. Girl, she says she told him she was pregnant, and Mr. Rick ain't called her back since.
What?
Gina couldn't believe it.
I'm telling you, shit is crazy.
Beverly finished the girl who was in the chair and took Gina over to the bowl, talking about everybody under the sun. Gina told her how she had been up at the fast food place when the three guys died. She didn't say nothing about the guy driving the caddy. Nothing said in a beauty salon is sacred. Everybody knows your business as it is. Gina didn't tell no secrets, but she stayed to gossip.
Well, you know I don't fuck with Jamal no more.
Why?
It just wasn't working, Bev. I care about him, but I can't see myself being with him.
Well, damn. You don't seem too sad about it.
I'm not. It's for the best.
Girl, I don't believe you're letting your Jamal go. He treated you real good.
Money can't buy love.
Hell, it could buy mine, said Bev. Mine too, said the girl sitting under the bowl beside Gina. Shit, he didn't try to take nothing back, did he? Beverly asked.
No, but if he wants his shit back, he can have it, said Gina.
I wouldn't give him nothing back, said Bev. Neither would I, honey. Keep your shit. Don't give that nigga back a damn thing,
said the girl sitting under the next bowl. Gina and Beverly just stared at the girl for a few seconds, and when Beverly finished washing Gina's hair, they went to her station. Gina couldn't wait to let go the good shit.
I met this guy, though,
she said.
Who?
Asked Beverly.
His name's Kadir.
Kadir from North with the BMW?
Asked Beth.
Yeah, you know him?
Yeah, he's supposed to be fucking with Dawn's sister, Sherelle.
He give her anything?
Asked Gina. I don't think so. He probably got her a pair of sneakers and shit. But he ain't throw that shit to her like Jamal threw it to you. Cause if he did, she would be in here running her mouth about it.
What's she look like?
Gina wanted to know. She don't look like nothing. She your average light-skinned bitch, said Bev, admiring Gina's chocolate skin tone.
She don't look better than me, do she?
Gina asked. Hell no. Girl, Kadir ain't no joke. The boy is large as hell. Jamal ain't never seen no money compared to that motherfucker. Girl, Kadir's middle name is Stock, and you would want to invest, said Bev.
Guess what?
What?
I met him Wednesday in New York. Last night we went to Atlantic City, and today he's taking me to the Bahamas.
Beverly put the curling iron down. Bitch lies.
No, I'm dead serious. So Sherelle can forget about him, because I'm getting ready to put my thing down.
I guess he just playing Sherelle.
I guess so,
said Gina. Damn, she act like she really in love with him too, said Bev.
She'll get over it. That's the way love goes,
said Gina with extreme confidence. So you just dropped Jamal when you started fucking with Kwa?
No, I met Kadir after me and Jamal broke up.
Here, said Beverly, handing her the hand mirror so she could see the back of her hair. Gina got a pump with a long strand of hair hanging down the side of her face. So, when are you leaving?
In a couple of hours. I gotta go shopping, buy some new luggage, and I gotta get my nails done.
I know you're happy, said Bev.
I am. It's something about him,
she said. Yeah, the man is rich, said Bev.
No, it's not that. It's the way he looks at me. And the way he talks to me, you know? It's like we're on the same vibe. It's like he's always been there, watching me.
Gina sat there with a gleam in her eyes talking about the man, while Beverly wished it was her.
I gotta go, Bev. I gotta meet Sahara. We gotta go shopping.
Gina got bathing suits, fashion accessories, short sets, summer dresses, and luggage. Then the girls went to nice new nail salon on Lancaster Avenue. Pam was booked, but acted like Gina had an appointment and squeezed her in. Sahara and Gina sat in the nail salon talking about Kadir and how nice he was, especially since Jamal was so mean. I'll be glad when someone comes along for me, Sahara said.
Sahara, you gotta settle down with somebody. That's what you gotta do. I know they're a pain in the ass, but it's like a job. Besides, niggas sweat you half to death when you got a man. You stay single too long, then niggas gonna think there's something wrong with you. Everybody's gonna do their thing, you dig me? It's all about respect. I would have been the lowest bitch on the planet if I would have taken them guys up on their propositions. But since I didn't, I showed loyalty to Jamal when I was with him. Girl, all them niggas think I'm a saint. You gotta prove that you are woman enough to be true to your man. That's all you gotta do. You're not gonna get no respect dealing with a brother on that wham, bam, thank you, here you go, ma'am tip. You need to know that that brother got your best interest at heart. Money don't mean he care. You can't run tricks on the big boys. Tricks are for kids, so you just chill. Slow down, baby, you moving kind of fast, that's all.
Sahara just sat there looking at her friend, knowing what she was saying was true, but she was having fun and just couldn't see herself with no one man. Gina finished getting the last coat of paint on her fingernails.
Guess what?
What?
Guess who the fuck is pregnant by Rick?
Who?
Veronica.
That slut. He went up in her ass raw. What's he on? Rick better check himself. I'm saying, though.
Don't he fuck with some girl named Lita?
You know, I think he does.
It probably ain't his, said Sahira. She probably don't know who the father is. The bitch is nothing but a whore. Sahira bristled with righteousness.
You don't like the girl because of Troy.
I don't like the bitch because she always up in your man's face. Watch, I bet the bitch will be fucking Jamal in a minute. Gina sat on the side of the wall until her nails dried, talking to Sahira. The girls were like sisters. Sahira really didn't want Gina to go, but she couldn't tell her not to. Gina would be all right. Sahira knew that. She was gonna miss her friend. How long you guys gonna be there?
A week or two.
Send me a postcard?
I'll do better than that. I'll bring you back something.
Smiled Gina. Sahira helped her get outside with her bags. A cab pulled over, and an Israeli gentleman stepped out the car to help Gina with her bags. Being as though Sahira had lost her money in Atlantic City, Gina slipped $300 in the palm of her hand. Sahira took Gina around her head and gave her a hug. The girls kissed cheeks and let each other go.
All right, I'm out. I'll see you when I get back.
Sahira waved goodbye and went back into the nail salon as the cab pulled away from the curb. The getaway. Ms. Shug was finally finished cooking the cocaine. She was letting it cool now so it could harden.
Didn't it come back good?
She was smiling at her success, revealing her missing teeth.
Yeah, Shug.
You doing it, he said.
Motherfuckers tell you I don't know what I'm doing. You tell them they is a lie. You hear me?
Yeah, Shug, I hear you,
said Kwa. He grabbed two large plastic bags and put the rocks in them.
Aye, Shug.
I'm out. She walked him to the door and talked him into his car. Rasun looked in the bag.
Shit, looks like Shug didn't beat you this time.
She beat me for a couple thousand to save our house, Kadir said knowingly. Turning back to Ra, he asked him, now you sure you can handle this?
Man, give me the bag,
Ra said, snatching the bag out of Kwa's lap. I know what to do with it. I'm going to cap this shit up tonight and be ready tomorrow. Kadir had some reservations about Ra's son's ambition. I want you to watch out for Jarrell and those suck-ass niggas, you hear me?
Man, what's the matter with you? That girl got you nervous. You don't have to check me, baby,
said Ra. I'm not nervous. I just want you to watch yourself.
It's Gina. She got you all fucked up in the head, nigga. I know she do, said Ra.
You don't know nothing.
Watch, by the time you get back, that girl's gonna be wearing your pockets.
Man, get the fuck out of here, said Kwa.
But I'm saying, as fine as she is, she could wear my pockets too, boss, said Ra.
She is all that, isn't she?
Sis definitely got it going on.
Ra got out of the car with his bag.
Compliments of Shug's superb cooking abilities.
Later, he said. Later, Kwa said, pulling off. He drove straight to his hideout and took all the money he'd collected earlier out of the trunk. Once he was in the apartment, he went straight to the closet door and unlocked it, exposing a huge safe where he had been keeping his money for years. He turned the knob, entering his combination. Click. Kwa opened the door. His money was safe and sound. The safe took up every inch of space in the closet, standing taller than himself. He had old school money in that motherfucker. He took the money out of the bag and threw it in the safe, locking it back up. He then packed two suitcases. He made sure his credit cards were in his wallet. He had everything together, his clothes, his money,
everything he could think of. He paced around the room, walking back and forth, making sure there was nothing he had forgotten to do. He went back over to the closet and made double sure the safe was locked, then grabbed his luggage and stepped. Gina was sitting on the porch when she saw Kadir's BMW turning onto her block. Her heart started pounding, and an inner thought of how she looked to him entered her mind. He pulled up in front of the door as Gina waved to him. "You ready to go?"
"I'm ready,"
she said. Rahsaan delivered Gina and Kadir at the airport, happy to be in charge and happy to have his BMW. Their flight, though somewhat turbulent, landed without a hitch.
"Damn, my ears are still ringing,"
she noted, annoyed.
"How long will it last?"
"Who knows? For me, I wake up in the middle of the night with my ears ringing, so I can't tell you."
"Oh my God,"
she said.
"I thought we were gonna die. The plane was rocking and shaking. I thought something was gonna happen."
"It was enough to make me buy a boat and sail the fuck home," he said like he meant it. After 3.5 hours on the plane, Gina understood how he felt. The only difference between them was that Gina liked to fly. She had always wanted to travel by air.
"Look at those trees. Will those trees grow in Philly?"
"Not 101 questions," he thought to himself. "I don't know, baby, but they grow in California."
"Have you ever been here before?"
she asked. "Yeah, twice before." Looking around, he said, "We gotta get a cab." They located their luggage and Kwa spotted the taxi stand. Entering the first available ride, he told the driver, "The Valiant Hotel on Paradise Island, please." The driver was very nice, making lots of conversation, but didn't seem to know where he was going. Kwa nudged Gina, whispering, "I swear I just saw the same damn building. Twice."
"Maybe you're having deja vu from when you were here before twice,"
she said with an attitude. "Gina, baby, I'm telling you, he don't know where he's going," whispered Kadir. The driver seemed to have been through this type of distrustful whispering before. "Me don't know, but me find a way. Me know what to do," he said, pulling out his map. "Damn, he don't know where he's at."
"Kwa, why don't you give him directions? You've been here before."
Kadir paid her no mind. "Man, how you don't know where you're at?" he asked.
"Me know from here, man. Me from Jamaica, man. Me a yadi."
"Oh, Lord,"
said Gina, collapsing into giggles. "Well, don't you see nothing that looks familiar?" asked Kwa. "Gina, stop that laughing."
"That's the bridge, man," he said, pointing far away.
"Okay, that's the bridge," grumbled Kwa. "What about the bridge?"
"The bridge takes you to Paradise Island, Star." "Relax, Star. Me find a way."
Gina glanced over at Kwa, who was shaking his head in frustration.
"We're gonna get there, Kwa,"
she said. "I don't know, baby. With Los Rasta here behind the wheel, we might not make it," he said. They looked out of their respective car windows, trying to quell their misgivings. It wasn't Philly. It wasn't anything like Philly. There were no skyscrapers and no city streets. No graffiti and no broken-down row homes. It was beautiful. It was nature at its finest. Gina was so glad she was there. Finally, they reached the bridge. The view was breathtaking. The sun glinted off the yachts, liners, and small fishing boats, some moving, some idling, all completing the canvas. Kadir paid the driver as a bellboy approached to assist Rasta with the baggage. "All right, Rasta. Man, you learn where you going, okay? I'm gonna tip you because I know shit is rough for a brother. But the next time you give me a ride, man," he continued, handing the Jamaican a $100 bill. I don't want to ride in circles, okay?
Yeah, I mean, no,
the Rasta said. Kwa kept saying, Mino, Mino, as the bellboy took the luggage inside the hotel. Gina was so glad to be there, pointing at this and at that. The scenery was too tropical. There were Bahamian musicians playing island music, and there was a bar. Sliding glass patio doors across the expansive lobby led to the swimming pool. Beyond the pool was nothing but white sand and clear crystal blue water that you thought existed only in commercials. Gina looked through the patio doors. It was a party. People were dancing and clapping, and there was a man singing on a platform, which was lit by poles of fire set at each corner. Gina had no energy to join the party after all that shopping, hairdoing, and flying. She was tired. Kwa walked over to her. Do you want your own room? She didn't know what to say and tried to hide her surprise. She had planned on sleeping with him. As a matter of fact, she expected him to want her with him, and his suggestion left her, well, stupefied. But she recovered.
I hadn't really thought about it.
Well, how about adjoining rooms? That way, if you want privacy to shower or change, you will have it. And if you need me, I'll be right there because our rooms will connect.
Okay,
she said, smiling up at him. That smile and those eyes made Kwa melt. He had to have her. When he finished signing for the rooms, he found Gina outside. You ready? Was she ready? Oh, was she ready?
Sure,
she said, as demurely as a sister who got picked up in Harlem and had the shit kicked out of her the morning she got home could be. Kadir had two keys in his hands. Which room do you want? He asked, holding out the keys in his hands.
Room 808,
she said, as the bellboy led them to their rooms. He opened their doors for them and carried their things inside each of the rooms. He had nothing to say, but he did manage a smile and thank you when Kwa handed him a $20 bill.
Why do you give money away like that?
Because he needs it, said Kadir, walking over to the balcony. They had a great view and hadn't even reserved the room in advance. Gina looked out the balcony with him for a few minutes, but she was so tired, all she wanted to do was lie down. Kwa, on the other hand, was thinking about nothing but a spliff. He had carried the weed right through customs in a vitamin container in his suitcase. Shit was great. Kwa sat on his balcony and looked at the water. This was what it was all about. This was living. Kadir wanted to travel the whole world. He had been in Philly all his life. The streets all his life. That wasn't no kind of life. He could base his home in Philly and could always deal with the streets. But he didn't want to be out there like that all his life. It wasn't the way. He knew there was something better for him. Gina laid on the bed, silently watching Kadir as she thought about her grandmother who had raised her since she was 4 when her mother died. Her mother. She never thought about her. No one spoke of her mother. Gina never knew why. All she knew was that when she was little, her father went to prison and her mother died. She didn't even remember her mother, not one memory. It didn't seem that bad to her that her mother was dead. And the fact that she never had a mother didn't seem to bother her. She loved her mother for bringing her into the world. She loved her for sharing her beauty with her and for her hands, her soft and gentle hands. But at 62, Gaget had patience and a lot of wisdom. She definitely had taken care of her grandbaby, Gina. Gaget took care of all her grandbabies. She told them stories about where they came from. She taught them all right from wrong. And she made them all go to Sunday school when they was little. She was a miraculous, God-fearing woman and very strong. Gina loved her grandmother. She was the only mother she knew. Kadir walked into her room. He had just taken a shower.
"Will you put this on my back?" he asked, handing her the lotion.
"We can go look around the island tomorrow, if you want to."
"Okay, I want to."
After she lotioned him down, she went into the bathroom, showered, and changed into a baby blue satin pajama set. Then she laid down beside him.
"You want to go swimming tomorrow?"
"Whatever you want to do," Kadir said, reaching over her and turning off the light. He laid back down and pulled her close to him. His strength could be felt as he consumed her in his arms, holding her close to him. Gina could feel his breath and hear his heartbeat as she laid next to him. He was divine. She couldn't believe it. He felt so warm, and his hold on her was so relaxing and so comforting. She felt safe. Gina lay next to Kadir, thinking of all she had done and all the places she had been, all the men, every single last 29 of them. Could she say they just got in the bed and held her? They might have fed her, bought her something, laid her body down, and gave her a couple dollars. But none of them simply held her. They slept until the afternoon. When they finally crawled out of bed, Kadir went into his room to change while Gina got herself together. By the time Kadir came back into the room, Gina looked like the girl he met in New York, not what he woke up to. Downstairs was sunny and bright. People were in the pool, and the musicians were still playing the island music. The bar was open, and people were ordering drinks already. Gina grabbed a pamphlet at the information booth at the front desk.
"Oh, look, a boat ride. Can we go?"
"Whatever you want," Kadir said, winking at her. After they had breakfast in the hotel restaurant, they went and toured the island. Kwa wanted to see the nude beach and, of course, the casino. There was lots of water and lots of shops. That basically summed it up for the island. So they went across the bridge into Nassau. There was a man selling conch shells.
"Kwa, look,"
she said. Gina said that at everything she saw. They rented mopeds and rode around the island all day and finally took a road that led into town. It was full of merchants who had everything you could think of, from jewelry to clothes. Kadir saw a dress hanging on a mannequin in a store window. "Gina, you will look good in that," he said.
"Do you think so?"
she asked. "I really do." He walked into the shop and told the sales lady he wanted the dress in the window. Blatantly, the woman stood aloof and distinctly replied, "That dress is $8,490. She did an about-face and waited for his reply.
"I don't believe I asked you for the price of the dress. I want the dress that is in the window. Do you not work here?" he asked politely.
"Yes, of course," she replied.
"Well, if I'm getting ready to spend $8,000 on a dress, wouldn't you want to get to stepping and wrap that shit in a box? 'Cause I'm getting real tired of the small talk." Kadir looked around and studied the store. The people were appalled by the rude display of behavior, and the sales lady couldn't bring herself to move. Meanwhile, another sales lady had attracted Gina to the shoes.
"Kwa, I have to have these. They would go perfect with the dress. Can I get them? Please?"
He got her everything she wanted. Gina was getting used to spending other people's money, and she did it very well, too. After dragging him around the island like a rag doll and making him carry all but two of the bags, Kwa was tired, hungry, and ready to go back to the hotel for a restaurant meal and a nap. They got a cab and went back across the bridge to the Valiant Hotel. "Let's order a movie and eat in," Kwa said. He felt like lying down. Once they got upstairs, he took Gina's things in her room and went into his. He wanted to figure out how much money he had spent.
He wasn't spending no money tomorrow. Gina gonna have to take her trick ass down on the beach and call it a day, he thought to himself, just as Gina opened the door to his room. Kadir had stacks of money lying beneath him on the floor. Quickly, he bent down and brushed it under the bed.
Are you busy?
She asked, trying desperately to see what was on the other side. Yeah, I'll be out there in a minute, he said, pushing her out of the door and closing it behind her. He picked up the phone and called Rasan. Assalamu alaikum. Alaikum assalam. I miss you, man. When you coming home? Rasan was glad to hear from his hero. I just got here. So what's going on? Everything safe? Yeah, shit is tight. I'm gonna meet the boy Rock tomorrow, and everything else has been running real smooth. Marlon Hawkins wants you to call him. I told him you was down in South Philly. What else is going on? Nothing. Stop worrying. All right, I'm out. Assalamu alaikum. Alaikum assalam.
Gotten and gone.
Back in Philly, the summer heat had driven everyone outside onto the sidewalks, porches, corners, and streets. There were open fire hydrants with bursts of water spraying children. Even elderly people were outside trying to keep cool. As usual, Ra's son was pretending to be Mac Daddy in Kadir's BMW. He drove to Gina's house, figuring he would surprise Sahira with dinner and a movie. When Sahira came to the door, she had this stupid, "I can't believe you're here without calling first," look on her face. "What's up?" Rasan asked. "Nothing. I was just getting ready to go out with a friend of mine," she said. "Out? Where you going?" "Dinner and a movie," Sahira said as Rasan's smile faded. She looked down at him as she stood on Gina's porch steps. For a moment, she remembered the night before last. It had been less than a week since she slept with him, and she was already disinterested. Besides, him and Kadir were nothing but whores. Sahira was infuriated at the thought of what was going on and was waiting for Gina's telephone call. "Why does Kadir have Gina over in some Bahamas somewhere with Sherelle? I heard that bitch is supposed to be waiting for him to get there. How is he playing my girlfriend? Answer that." "Well, I don't know nothing. I don't have nothing to do with it, and I don't know what you're talking about," Ra said, ready to go now. "Being as though you got company and all, I'll push up on you some other time," he said. "Mm-hmm. Later," she replied, as she turned her back to him and closed the door. Rasan walked over to the BMW, trying to figure where he knew the burgundy Mercedes-Benz that was parked in front of the door. He knew Sahira had some nigga up in Gina's house. He felt bad because he really liked her. As much as he felt like shouting, "Fuck you, bitch," he just kept it inside, knowing that she didn't feel the same. "Fuck it," he finally said to himself as he turned the sound system up. "There's 9 women to every 1 man out here," he continued thinking.
Rasan drove back down to North Philly.
"What's up?" he said as he pulled up on the corner of 25th Street.
"Nothing, man. What's up?"
asked Reds.
"You got the money?" "Yeah," Red said, pulling a knot of paper out of his pocket, handing it to Rasan. "I'm almost out." "What you got left?" Rasan asked.
"Maybe 20,
Red said, spotting some girls walking across the street.
"Hey, you in the red shorts. Can I talk to you for a minute, baby? Damn, you got it going on,"
he hollered loud enough for them to hear. The girls looked his way and walked toward him, smiling and snickering among themselves. "Yo, I'll be right back," Ross shouted to Reds, who wasn't paying him any mind with all that ass surrounding him. Actually, he didn't even hear him. Rod drove off in the Beamer, headed back to his mother's house, and got some more caps for Reds. When he got back, Kenny, Reds, and the whole crew were out on the Ave.
"What's up?"
Rod asked.
"Rich Green is what's up,"
Reds answered.
"Man, fuck Rich Green. I will lay that nigga down. He don't want none of this,"
said Ra, tapping a nine that was by his wayside.
"Okay, we'll see what happens when the motherfucker comes through spraying. Let's see what you do then,"
Pookie said, knowing that something bad was going to happen. Paying him no mind, Ra-Sun looked around and asked everybody,
"What's on for tonight?"
"I don't know. Want to go to Chances?"
Reds asked. Ra heard him, but he didn't answer. He was thinking about Sahira. He wished he was out with her, not getting ready to go to Chances with Reds.
"Yeah, we could do that,"
said Ra.
"I want to go,"
Kenny said.
"Me too,"
said Pookie.
"I'm going,"
Dante added.
"How are all of you gonna go?"
asked Ra.
"Everybody can't go. Somebody has to stay out here and hold down the fort. Kenny, you and Pookie stay out here. Where's Wiz?"
"He went to take his mom's a platter,"
Dante said.
"Why the fuck do I got to stay out here?"
Kenny demanded to know.
"Because, man, you got to stay the fuck out here, that's why,"
Reds told him.
"Man, fuck you," said Kenny.
Rod didn't like this bickering.
"Yo, why you drawing, Kenny?"
"Man, you know why you got to stay out here?"
"Why?"
"Because, man, you can keep track of shit. I know that if you're out here, shit will be cool."
Rai had been learning from his mentor. It's what Kadir would have said, assuaging the boy, stroking his ego. Unfortunately, Kenny wasn't trying to hear the shit. He wanted to go to the party, too.
"Where's the gat?"
Kenny wanted to know, looking at Reds.
"Man, I got it."
"We'll give it up,"
Kenny said.
"What you need the gun for?"
Reds asked.
"Man, what you need it for? You're going to the party, right?"
Reds didn't want to give up the gun.
"What the fuck you need it for?" "Man, y'all leaving me out here with Dante and Pookie, man. No offense, no defense,"
Kenny acknowledged, looking at them.
"So you gonna have to give the gat up."
"Ock, give Kenny the motherfucking nine, will you?"
Ra-Sun huffed, having no understanding why they was always fighting over the guns.
"That's right."
Kenny had an ally in Ra.
"What am I supposed to do if sucker-ass Rich Green comes back around here?"
But Reds wasn't satisfied.
"Why I got to give him Ina? This is Kadir's. Why don't you give him yours, Ra-Sun?"
He stood tall, waiting for Ra's response.
"We can stop by my mom's and get homicide. Just let Kenny hold the gun. Damn,"
huffed Ra-Sun, getting agitated.
"You gonna be with me. You don't need a gun." "Man, fuck that. I needs mines."
"Well, we all need our own guns," said Pookie.
"Well, take that shit up with Kadir when he comes back,"
Ra said, knowing Kwa wasn't giving them no guns like that. Mentally, they couldn't handle a gun. Putting a gun in their hands with their intellect was mayhem and mass confusion. And Kadir knew it and wasn't taking any chances on Bucks fucking up his game. Finally, after bickering and debating, Reds gave it up. He and Ra got in the BMW.
"We'll be right back,"
said Ra-Sun, as he sped down the Ave. As they drove away, Reds gave Ra-Sun a lecture.
which included 101 reasons why he should have never given Kenny the gun.
"Man, Kenny will kill somebody with that gun," said Reds.
"He isn't going to kill nobody."
"You know how he is. I don't know why you want to put a body on the gun like that. The gun was clean. The gun was Kadir's,"
reminded Reds.
"He ain't gonna kill nobody. Well, if Rich Green comes back around that motherfucker, shit is on," said Reds.
Chances was packed. People were everywhere.
"Mercy me! The freaks do come out at night. They is everywhere,"
said Reds, admiring all the skimpy outfits and the outlines of what was underneath.
"Look what her ass got on. Damn, baby, might as well have worn nothing. Just come outside naked. Damn it."
He hollered across the street to some half-naked girls.
"Man, leave them hoes the fuck alone and don't call them over here to us,"
said Rasan.
"No problem. I'm getting ready to go over there as soon as I roll this spliff."
"Man, I wouldn't want to fuck with none of them girls, man," said Ra.
"You might not want to fuck with them, but you will fuck them, so shut the fuck up," said Reds, laughing at his best friend.
Ra knew Reds was right. They both got out the car. Everybody was out that night. All Kadir's people were there, who had individually reached the 100-kilo mark. Rick's boys were on the set, but Rick wasn't with them. The brothers were out. They dealt strictly with Amin, who no one ever saw much of. The boy Rick, who put Jarrell Jackson and the boy Blair on their feet, was in the house with a bottle of Dom in his right hand and some girl's titty in his left. She didn't mind, because she was half drunk too. Kadir, Rick, Amin, Blair, 40, and Winston were all making millions of money in the drug game. Everyone else was down with one of them. Even though the mafia controlled the majority, it did not affect them from getting paper. It made them targets for being so large. The funny thing about it, though, was that everyone knew one another. Everyone knew who was down with one another. Females might not have known all the players, and for the most part, they didn't. But the brothers did. Rasun saw Jarrell's Jaguar parked outside. He was probably inside trying to figure out who had more money than him. That seemed to be his main concern in life, having the most drug money. All of Gina's girlfriends were out. Finally, Rasun saw Sahira, who was with Winston.
"That's whose burgundy Mercedes that is."
The thought went through his heart like an arrow. Trying to get past it, he decided to mess with Reds.
"Yo, Reds, there goes your girl,"
said Ra, looking at Veronica across the street.
"Man, I can't stand that girl. She really tried to play me. And for the phone bill at that."
Veronica stopped and talked to Sahira's old boyfriend, Troy. Troy, who used to be Sahira's man, was now seeing Val, who was Jamal's girlfriend before Gina. Val was there. She had a baby by Jamal. Val loved Jamal, but not enough to be faithful, though. One day, Jamal was downtown, and there was a brother in his 98 leaning to the side, riding his car with his woman like he was the owner of both. Jamal, being the psychopath he is, kicked both their asses and put them both out of his car. When the cops came, they didn't do anything. As a matter of fact, Val was all beat up, and the other guy needed stitches. But the officers called it a domestic dispute. No broken bones, no harm done. They cleared the scene, and Jamal wouldn't speak to Val anymore, even though Val was 5 months pregnant. Sis wasn't sure whose baby it was, so she followed her heart. Her heart didn't have nothing to do with it when that baby was born, the spinning image of Jamal. Jamal loved his son. He truly did. But Val played him for another man, and there was no way his pride would allow him to take her back.
Is everybody out here tonight or what?
Reds asked.
Most definitely, Ra said. The majority of the brothers who were out had a woman at home. The funny thing about it was that even though you might be with a guy and really call him your man, you knew in the back of your mind that he wasn't your man. He was his own man first, and then anybody's man for the moment. That was the bottom line. The brothers were socially acceptable whoremongers inheriting the earth. Gina's girlfriends all knew this, but it didn't make a difference. As long as they were spending money, nothing really made a difference. Nothing else mattered. Inside the club, everyone was really partying. No one in the club was standing still, except the thick-ass bouncers. Rob paid one of them $50 to let him in with his nine. You figure how many brothers had their guns on them, and how many guys paid the bouncers $50. The bouncers got paid. Everyone was partying and having a good time. Ra's son was standing near a table with Rock and his peoples.
Yo, get with me tomorrow, same place, same time. I'll see you brothers on the outside,
Rock said, ready to make his exit. All right, they said, shaking his hand goodbye. Yo, you ready to go? Ra asked.
Waiting on you, said Reds, as they both headed for the door.
Reds and Ra walked across the street to the car.
Yo, hold up,
Reds told Ra as he saw a prospective one-night stand. He walked down the street in the opposite direction of the car over to a group of girls. Ra spotted Winston sitting in his car, but Sahira wasn't with him. Where was she? He wondered as he looked through the crowd of faces. Finally, he spotted her across the street standing in front of the club. What's up? He asked, walking up on her. Hi, what are you doing here? She asked. He wanted to tell her that he took her personal, that he felt something for her, and wanted to be with her, just her. If just for a minute, or for longer than that, he wanted her time. So you waiting on Winston or what? Ra asked as they both looked across the street. Winston was sitting in his car talking to a group of girls that had flocked around his 300 CE. Sahira knew the girls. She couldn't stand them. Neither could Gina.
Yeah, how'd you know that? She asked.
His car was sitting outside Gina's door earlier, so I figured it out. It wasn't too difficult, he said, shrugging his shoulders as if it really weren't.
Oh.
I'm ready to go. You want to ride with me? He asked, praying inside that she would say yes. Sahira didn't know what to do. What if Winston left her for one of those girls he was talking to? You need to come with me, Sahira. Don't you know about the guys you hang around? Do you understand you need to be careful out here? It was really crowded outside the club. Cars were riding back and forth, up and down the street. People were standing all around as if they had no place to go, while other people were walking around, not really going anywhere.
You really think I should go with you?
You should know what you should do, Sahira. But if you need me to tell you, then, okay, you need to go with me. Look at him with those girls. That's disrespectful to you, and you know it. How you gonna let him play you like that? I would never disrespect you like that. You should have been stepped off, Ra said. Ignoring his concern for her, she didn't want to let status slip away. Being the one Winston and his Mercedes-Benz went home with would confer royalty on her, and she wanted to be Queen Sahira.
He's not playing me. Why don't you mind your own business? She spat at him.
Fuck this, I'm out, said Ra, walking away from her, hoping that she would come after him. No sooner had Ra walked away
when Winston's shiny burgundy Mercedes-Benz 300 CE
circled from the lot and headed Sahira's way. Sahira thought for a minute about Ra's son. Perhaps she should go with him, just to play with Winston's mind. Instead, when Winston pulled up, Sahira got in.
Who were you talking to?
She asked.
Just some girls from South Philly. They were trying to get me to give them a ride home.
He tried to reassure her with a pat on her thigh, but she knew he was lying because those girls were from down the bottom, not South Philly. At that moment when he lied to her, she really wished she had went with Rasan.
Why do you have to lie to me? I know every whore in the city, and they live nowhere near South Philly. They live down the bottom. I can't believe you got to lie. That means you are trying to hide something. What, you fuck with one of them or something?
Sahira had a serious, tell me the deal look on her face. Winston continued driving his car as he turned his radio louder, paying no attention to Sahira. The only thing in his mind was whether he should just throw her a couple of dollars now or fuck her first and then throw her a couple of dollars. Either way, he was getting rid of Sahira, and quick. A Cadillac eased up to the light beside him. The two cars were side by side waiting for the light to change when the Cadillac's tinted window rolled down. A guy in the passenger seat called out to Winston. Sahira finally quieted herself since she had gotten in the car, and she and Winston looked his way. For a split second, Sahira recognized Ran, and as she opened her mouth to say hello, he opened fire on Winston. The bullets came crashing through the steel, one hitting Winston in the shoulder. His body slumped forward on the steering wheel. The Cadillac sped away as shattered glass continued to fall to the ground. Sahira ducked down and started screaming,
"Oh my God, Winston!"
Looking at him slumped over the steering wheel, moaning, she knew he'd been shot, but at the same moment, couldn't believe it. She felt funny, kind of dizzy and lightheaded. Probably just from being scared, she thought. He remained conscious and could see her, all hunched down, and wondered if his mouth still worked.
You okay?
He asked, but was more focused on the bullet that ripped through him. He slowly pulled himself from the steering wheel and lifted Sahira back up into a sitting position. Her hand passed in front of her eyes on the way back up, and she saw that it was covered with blood. She felt her face and looked down at her lap. Putting her hand to her chest, she could feel the ripples of blood-drenched flesh as Winston realized she'd taken a hit too.
"Oh my God, Sahira, you've been shot!"
Sahira heard him from very far away. There was a more interesting channel to watch inside her head just now. Everything was flashing in front of her. People and places that she had forgotten had come to life. All the moments in time replayed themselves as fast-moving images popped in her head.
Oh, there goes me and Gina on the swings. Hi, Gina.
And Mama.
Mama, I don't want no barrettes. I want ribbons. Ribbons is prettier.
Her eyes had closed, and Winston felt panic.
Sahira! Sahira! Talk to me!
She tried to look up at him, whispering,
Help me, Winston. It's burning. Please, somebody help me.
She worried that Winston's image was fading,